Chapter 19. Old Ghosts. The galley sped through the mist-soaked air above the featureless mire. Grey sludge stretched in all directions, broken only by a few scraggly trees and sluggish inlets scattered about in haphazard fashion. The mist clung to everything and stank of old, dark places and forgotten waters. Gardas felt his soul curdle as he contemplated the emptiness. This was a place where hope came to die. Nothing lived here, save that which had not yet died. There were no shrieking birds, no monstrous shapes, only the turgid squelch of the grey waters as they swirled slowly towards the garden's black heart. There were no shapes to break up the monotony of the sky above, no leering faces, no ominous clouds, only a colourless, infinite expanse. Everything here was grey and washed out. So oppressive was it that even the vibrant hue of their vessel had grown dull, and the distant bobbing of Cadoc's beacon was barely visible. Gardas kept to his post, anchoring the chain of light. His limbs and back had begun to ache, and he felt a soul-deep weariness within him. He wanted nothing more than to cease, to sleep.
Garadan, sleep, Garadan, sleep as we sleep. Sleep and dream no more.
Gardas blinked, trying to keep his eyes open. His grip on the chain slackened.
Help us, Garadan. Why don't you help us? Don't leave us.
He felt the feather-like touch of hands on his warplate, heard the whisper of many voices in his ears, asking him to sleep, to rest. The chain grew slack.
Garadan, help us, teacher. Burning up. It hurts. Garadan.
Gardas jolted awake. His fists clenched around the chain, and he hauled back on it, looping it more tightly about his forearm.
I'm sorry, he said, softly.
But he did not know who he was apologizing to.
You hear them as well, then?
Gardas glanced over at Morbus. The Lord Relictor had startled him.
Yes.
As do the others.
Morbus spoke quietly, as if afraid of being overheard.
Seeing things, as well as hearing them. Things that grow worse the closer we get to...
He trailed off. Gardas knew what he meant. Their guide had been quiet since they'd left the hopeless city behind, as if dumbstruck by their persistence. Despite this, they knew where they were going. Everything here was moving, however slowly, in the same direction.
And you, are you seeing things, hearing things?
Morbus was silent for long moments. Then,
I hear only the voices of those whose souls are in my keeping.
He held up a hand. Light flickered between the gaps in his armor. Not the soft light that Gardas had become so familiar with, but the harsh, burning light of the storm.
At times, their cries crowd out my own thoughts.
You should not have come, Gardas said.
If I had not, their souls would be lost.
Morbus looked at him.
Yours as well. There are more subtle enchantments here than we have faced. Lights that can draw souls into abyssal bogs, horrors stalking through the poison clouds far above. We have faced only the least of what this place has to offer, thanks to my rites and Cadoc's lantern. Without those protections, we would have lost more warriors than we did.
He shook his head.
Why did we really come here, Gardas?
You have asked me that before, and you did not answer me then.
Not really. You said you did not know. Do you know now?
Gardas looked at him.
No. It is merely a thing I must do. Back there, I heard a voice, telling me that this must be accomplished, whatever the cost.
He held up a hand, watching the light play across the silver of his gauntlet. This light, it eases the pain of some and causes injury to others. Am I like Kadok's beacon, a tool of judgment? The souls here cower back from me. The vegetation withers. To what end? Morbus sighed.
Sigmar's.
He said it as if the answer was obvious.
This war of ours, it is not waged solely with rune blades and hammers, and there are battlefields less tangible than even this place. The ruinous powers forced Sigmar back, broke his great peace, and shattered his allies. Thus we were forged, symbols and swords in one. We are the sound of the hammer beating the world into shape. We purge the land, raise walls. Where we stand, order holds true, and chaos is cast back.
Gardas nodded, for Morbus's words were familiar. But the Lord Relictor wasn't finished.
We are also a message, a challenge cast into the teeth of the foe.
Morbus bowed his head.
That we stand here now, battered and weary as we are, is a sign of Sigmar's contempt for his enemies, and a warning as to his intentions.
Gardas hesitated.
You think he knew, then, that this would happen? I think he sent us to the plains of Vo for a reason. I think there is a purpose behind every command, whether we understand it or not.
Morbus leaned heavily on his staff.
I think, if it was not us, it would have been someone else.
He chuckled.
You are not alone in surviving a journey to the realm of the dark gods. Others have done it. Thostos Bladestorm, Aureus Adamantine. None for so long as you, but it has been done.
And now we are doing it again.
But for it to mean anything, we must walk out again. And that is the true test. That is...
Morbus bent forward, limbs twitching. The lightning crawling across him grew darker and fiercer, driving Gardas back. Morbus's staff fell from his grip, and he dropped to his hands and knees. The Lord Relictor screamed. Lightning snapped out, carving black gouges across the deck and mast. Gardas threw up a hand to shield his eyes. Morbus screamed again, and it was not his voice alone that cried out. His scream was echoed 5, 6, 7 times. Gardas heard Osric and Kaya's voices among them, as well as others who had died since entering the garden. Their shapes were superimposed over that of the Lord Relictor, mimicking his agonized movements. Their pain was his. Worse yet, as Morbus writhed, the chain in Gardas's hand began to crumble away into flickering motes. The galley shuddered, as if caught by an unseen wave. The radiance that had protected them since they'd begun their journey was fading. The hull creaked as the galley began to lose altitude. The sails flapped and tore as their descent grew swift.
Hold on!
Gardas cried, as the last motes of light slipped between his fingers. The galley did not plummet like a stone as he'd feared. Though the magic was fast fading, it did not vanish all at once. But the descent was not gentle in the least. The vessel spun through the air like a leaf caught in a downdraft. It rolled end over end, losing pieces of itself as it fell. The hull cracked, spilling the contents of the hold like blood. The oars split and shattered, the splintered remnants streaming upwards. Stormcast sailed on where they could, using their weapons to anchor themselves to the rattling deckboards. Eventually, the galley slammed down with a tooth-rattling crunch. The mast snapped and fell, crushing several rowers' benches. The remaining oars burst into jagged shards, and the keel cracked. The sails were torn loose from the fallen mast by a sudden wind and flew out over the mire. Gardas shouldered aside a broken section of mast and rose to his feet. Others did the same. Gardas saw no bodies, smelled no blood, and felt a wave of relief pass through him. Aishas clambered towards him.
Everyone is alive, the Liberator Prime said. For now.
Gardas looked around. They were wedged at the mouth of an inlet, caught among the remains of several barren trees. The mire stretched out around them, flat and featureless, desolate.
See to Morbus. Do what you can for him.
He moved to the mast and dragged Gatrog to his feet. The Rotbringer had come through the crash intact and was still bound tight. He grunted as Garda slammed him back against the broken base.
How much, father?
It doesn't matter, Gatrog said. This is where it ends.
No, not yet. How long will it take us to reach desolation?
The only way to reach desolation is to surrender to despair, to fully give oneself over to the king of all flies.
Gatrog wasn't laughing now.
You are honorable warriors, brave, but you are cursed with weakness. Hope still chains you. Until you shed its weight, you will never find the inevitable citadel.
He looked away.
Even I cannot find it.
Hope is chaining you as well,
Tornus said. The Knight Venator made his way towards them, clutching his abdomen as if it pained him. Gardas wondered if he'd injured himself in the crash. Gatrog ignored him. He seemed shaken.
Kill me if you wish. I cannot help you.
Without thinking, Gardas reached for his runeblade. Tornus stopped him.
I will be convincing him, Lord Celestant. He will be helping us, whether he is wishing to or not.
Gardas studied the Knight Venator. Tornus seemed different. Somehow. His limbs trembled ever so slightly, as if straining against some unseen weight. Gardas caught a whiff of something rancid, like decaying meat.
Are you injured?
He asked.
I am feeling sick.
Tornus swayed, and Gardas reached out to steady him.
I am being hot and cold at the same time.
He shook his head, as if trying to clear it.
Hearing, seeing things.
You are not alone.
Gardas turned, searching the mire. Indistinct shapes swayed in the distance, growing closer. A few at first, but every passing moment brought more, until they surrounded the stranded galley on all sides. The wind had picked up. The mist was creeping in on cat-quiet feet. He could hear voices in its gentle susurrus. From the sound of it, he wasn't the only one. Stormcasts crowded the rails, looking out into the grey. Some of them spoke in hushed tones, while others merely stared. A liberator staggered, clawing at her helmet. Gardas reached her before she got it off.
No, sister. Leave it on. This place is poison.
My children, I left them.
Her words came in sharp staccato breaths. The mist coiled about her like the arms of a lover, and Gardas tried to disperse it.
They are calling to me.
She tried to pull away from him.
Can't you hear them?
I hear. I see. But they are not here. Listen to me. All of you, listen.
Gardas raised his voice, silencing the others.
They are not here. None of them. The spirits of this place are not real. They are lies.
The mist thickened, clinging to everything. He could see the hint of faces within it, and groping hands.
They are real enough, Gatrog said. This place, the mist, the water, even these trees are made from the souls of the despairing dead. Those who succumbed to grandfather's blandishments, but lacked the strength to endure the joys they brought. Weak souls.
The Rotbringer spat in evident disgust.
And weakness is the mortar with which grandfather builds his garden walls.
But they are not the souls of the righteous, and thus we need have no concern for their murmurings,
Karok called out as he dropped to the deck in a crackle of lightning. The Knight Azeroth rose, beacon in hand. The mist retreated in the face of the glow. The murmurings dimmed. Karok laughed.
Look to my light, brothers and sisters.
It is the fire of Azir, into which I fed 1,000 souls such as these. Weak souls, corrupt and broken by the weight of that corruption. Watch them burn!
He raised his beacon higher, so that the light washed across the deck. Gardas felt as if a weight had been lifted from him. His own light swelled in answer to that of the beacon. He turned and saw several ghostly shapes standing nearby, watching the stormcasts. The hazy figures were all over the ship. They retreated before the light, but wherever it turned away from them, they crowded close once more. Gatrog stood unconcerned amongst a crowd of them.
"They are drawn to the living," he said, "to your hopes and desires, for they have none."
He twitched away from an insubstantial hand.
"They will draw you into their embrace and make you one of them, unless you accept the truth of despair and have the courage to continue, as all pilgrims must."
"We are no pilgrims," Kadok snarled. He drew his starblade. "We are the sword of Azir, silver and sharp. We are the weapon of the God King, thrust into the bloated belly of his enemy, as I will do to you if you continue to yap."
"Well then, thrust away,"
Gatrog said. He lurched forward to meet Kadok's glare.
"If you wish a fight, you have but to strike off these chains and give me a blade. I will meet your fire again and reduce it to naught but ashes."
Kadok growled and swung the beacon towards Gatrog. Gardas caught Kadok's wrist.
"Save your light for the wraiths, Kadok. His only threat is to your pride."
For a moment, Gardas thought Kadok would ignore his command. But the Knight Azeroth subsided. Taunus caught Gatrog by his chains and led him away. Souls shied away from the Knight Venator, as if something about him disturbed them. Gardas felt a flicker of worry, but pushed it aside as he watched Aetius help Morbus down onto the lower deck.
"Morbus, are you well?"
"Clearly not,"
the Lord Relictor said. His voice was a whisper, and azure cracks ran across his armor. His eyes were burning orbs of fire, lost to the radiance within him. Light flickered in the depths of his mask whenever he spoke. Heat bled off him, causing the air to waver strangely.
"I think I have found a flaw in this particular rite."
"We should probably tell someone," Gardas said.
He helped Morbus to sit and sank to one knee before him.
"You're not breathing," he added quietly.
"Not a surprise. My lungs are ash. My heart is a knot of lightning. My blood is smoke."
Morbus laughed weakly.
"I am truly the storm made manifest."
He looked up, and Gardas was forced to turn away. The light seeping from the eye slits of the Lord Relictor's mask was too intense to meet for long.
"I will not survive this, and when I perish, so too will all those whom I hold safe within me."
"How long?"
Morbus looked away.
"How long is a storm? A few hours? Days? Perhaps only moments."
His grip on his staff tightened, causing the heat-blackened sigmarite to creak.
"We must find some way to keep moving. If we stay here, we will be consumed by this place. It has already begun."
Gardas followed his gaze and saw Tegras rocking back and forth, muttering to himself. The insubstantial shape surrounded the prosecutor and seemed to be whispering.
"Without the light, we will be overwhelmed."
"Not if we move, and soon."
Morbus caught his arm.
"We must get to Desolation."
"We will find Grimm before then," Gardas said. "Whatever else, we will not fail."
Morbus shook his head.
"No, not Grimm. It is to Desolation that we must go. That is what this has all been about, Gardas. That is why we have journeyed so far. Kadok is a fool, but he is right about one thing. We are Sigmar's weapon, and we must find his enemy's heart. Whatever the cost, whatever the consequence, we must reach desolation.
He sagged back.
All of this was for nothing.
Taunus staggered away from the others. The pain had been growing since the hopeless city, like a seed spreading black shoots through him. He leaned against the stump of the mast, unable to catch his breath. It felt as if there was fluid in his lungs. He was drowning in the open air. He wanted to tell Gardas or Morbus, someone. They would know what to do. But he couldn't force the words out. He sagged, head bowed. It was unlikely that Morbus would be able to help him, at any rate. The Lord Relictor looked worse than Taunus felt, as if there were a fire building within him, getting ready to explode at any moment. He glanced at Morbus and saw him sitting hunched on the steps to the forward deck. Gardas knelt before him, and they conferred in low tones. A spasm of pain rippled through him, and he bit back a groan.
Torgluk,
Gatrog asked, watching him. There was a wariness in the Rotbringer's voice as he stood, or perhaps worry.
I am telling you, I am not being Torgluk,
Taunus hissed, as another spasm of pain racked him.
I am being Taunus.
He could smell something familiar, the stink of pure water turning sour, of stone crumbling to mouldy dust and flesh sloughing from bone. He could hear familiar screams echoing dimly out of the grey.
Lies,
he whispered. They were just lies, as Gardas had said.
Nothing here is a lie,
Gatrog said.
No more than your reflection in a pool of water is a lie.
He crept close, chains rattling.
I can smell something flowering within you, Torgluk. Your hope withers, and new life rises.
Quiet!
Taunus blinked, trying to clear his vision. Beads of sweat rolled down, burning his eyes. His stomach was knotted up. The splintered wood of the mast turned to powder in his grip. He whipped around as if he half-glimpsed a familiar face. He groped for a name as one shape amongst the hazy masses grew solid. The apparition moved towards him, her shape wreathed in silent flame. Her body was charred black, with only her eyes remaining unburnt. They were a deep, mossy green, and when they met his heart felt as if it were being torn in two. She reached for him, and he stumbled to meet her. What was her name? Why couldn't he remember?
Because you killed her,
his shadow said. He looked down. His shadow raised an axe. The burning woman shrank back, mouth open in a scream that never came. Taunus groaned as the shock of the blow reverberated through his arms. More blows, the echoes of blows long since fallen, shuddered through him, and he shook his head, trying to focus. The smells were stronger now, all-encompassing, and he knew them, finally. The life wells were burning, and his people with them. His first act as Torglug had been the butchery of all that Taunus had loved. He turned and saw not the galley or his fellow stormcasts, but instead fire. Balefire, burning bright and hungry. Ancient trees, bastions of bark and aged strength, crumpled in the flames. Burning figures fled, their screams like the sweetest of songs. Other faces pressed in on him from all sides, begging with him, pleading for mercy. And it was mercy he gave them, though not the sort they wished. Death was the only mercy Torgluk had understood. Death was an end to all pain, all hope, all fear. His people had begged him for mercy, and he bestowed it with a swing of his axe. He felt bones crunch beneath his feet and the heat of a collapsing tree.
I am not doing this. This is not being me.
He pounded his fists against his head. Somewhere he could hear Osphinus shrieking. He wanted to fly, to rise and seek the stars once more. There had been peace there, in the void, freedom from the weight of his past, But that weight never went away. He had been purged in the fires of Azir, but some kernel of filth yet remained, and it had been growing ever since he'd entered this realm. The ghostly screams of the Everdorn tribe rose into a keening wail. Added to their number were the bellowing voices of the Viridian Ogors and the rasping hiss of the Sylvaneth. 1,000,000 souls crying out as one. The names rolled over him. Treecutter, Gutspiller, the Despised One, the Woodsman of Nurgle. Torglug! 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 Pain, sharp and insistent. Taunus sank to one knee, arms wrapped about his midsection. He sucked in air for a scream, but no sound came. Bile burned in his throat. He fell to his hands and knees. Vomit spewed from his mouth, splattering against the inside of his helmet. He clawed at the clasps, trying to get it off. He heard voices raised in concern, but couldn't respond. Vomit pooled on the deck. A hand, thick with fat and muscle, erupted from the puddle. Wide fingers fastened about his helmet and shoved him upwards. Taunus was forced upright as an arm followed the hand. Then a shoulder and a round head hidden within a corroded helm topped by a single curved horn. A moment later, Taunus was dangling helplessly from the apparition's grip. The woodsman of Nurgle chortled and lifted Taunus high.
"You are being surprised, yes?"
Torglug the Despised said.
"And it is being the last surprise you are having."
Gatrog stumbled back in shock as the apparition rose, dragging Taunus from his feet. He recognized the hulking shape instantly, for he had fought beside it often enough. Torglug the Despised, Ironhood the Woodsman, favored of Nurgle, hero of the Battle of the Black Cistern. The featureless helm turned in his direction.
"You are being one of Grandfather's."
"I am,"
Gutrog began.
"In chains."
The great axe licked out, severing the links and gashing Gatrog's arms and chest.
"You are being useless in chains. Find a blade and die as Grandfather wills."
The bloated creature turned his attention back to his other self.
"And you are being nothing more than an empty vessel I am casting aside."
Torglug hurled Taunus away, and something in Gatrog spasmed in sympathy. For all that he was an abomination, the Stormcast had treated him fairly and honorably, as well as any knight of the Order. He shook himself, pushing the moment of weakness aside. Taunus was a falsehood. Torglug was Grandfather's truth. And he had come, like one of the old heroes from the songs of the troubadours, like the stories Goril had told him when he'd been but a squire.
"Ah, cousin, this would have pleased you to no end."
He cast about, seeking something to use as a weapon. Stormcasts advanced on Torglug, shields raised in a vain effort to hold back the bite of the woodsman's axe. Torglug laughed and swept his axe out in a wide loop, driving them back. The axe reversed course, splintering arrows in mid-flight. The woodsman was as magnificent as Gatrog remembered.
"Is this being all that is left? How many souls are littering your path, Azorites?"
Torglug rested his axe in the crook of his arm.
"It is hardly being worth the effort."
"Then by all means, retreat back into whatever nethermost hell you crawled out of," Gardas said, pushing his way forward, hammer in hand. "What are you, a ghost, or just some twist of shadow and stink?"
"I am being Torglug, and you are being Gardas."
Torglug brought his axe up, gripping it in both hands.
"Gardas, who is so kindly leading me to Alariel. Gardas, who is running so rudely through Grandfather's garden. Gardas, Shiver Soul, the fly dandies of Grandfather's court call you. Gardas, the coward. Gardas, the weak."
Gardas drew his rune blade. "A phantom, then. an echo of failures past. His voice rang with certainty, and the light that gleamed off him grew so bright that Gatrog had to look away. He paused in his attempts to find a weapon and stood watching as the two warriors met. Fat sparks of balefire erupted as their weapons clashed. Torglug roared and cursed as he hewed at Gardas. Gardas, in contrast, fought in silence. Gatrog could not say who was the stronger. He heard a murmur and turned. The souls of the despairing dead threaded among the stormcasts, whispering in their ears or holding their gazes. The ghostly shapes crowded the deck, slowly but surely isolating the warriors from one another. Without Gardas to rally them, without the cursed light of Azir, they were losing faith. Even the skull-faced shaman was powerless against such persistent murmurings. His body twitched and thrashed as the dead surrounded him. The spotted griffhound stood protectively over him, snapping fiercely but uselessly at the spirits. Gatrog wanted to laugh, but didn't, couldn't. Once, perhaps, but not now. Not after seeing what he'd seen. There was courage here and honor, though it was in service to a false god. Sigmar was not worthy of such warriors. This was not victory, not the sort he'd hoped for at any rate. It was a trick. The whispering shapes struck at places no warrior could hope to defend. And though it served the will of the king of all flies, it was not right.
"And who are you to say what is right, cousin?"
Gatrog whirled. Goral sat on the rail, eating one of the ripe black apples that grew in the orchards of Festophane. There were others beside him, knights all, brawnier Sir Culgus, who had perished in the writhing weald alongside Goral, and young pallid Woes, with whom he'd earned his spurs. Blightmaster Walkus and brave Sir Festabite, others, dozens, drifting into hazy obscurity.
"Cousin, have you come to aid me?" Gatrog asked.
Goral took another bite of his apple. His scabrous armor creaked about his swollen frame as he leaned forward.
"In a manner of speaking, fair cousin, I come to ask but a single question. Is your faith waning?"
"No,"
Gatrog said.
"Then why do you hesitate?" a voice rumbled.
Gatrog turned and looked up into the frowning, demonic visage of Count Dolorogus, the hero of the City of Reeds, who had perished in the attempt to summon Nurgle's legions. The great antlered head dipped, and a sigh gusted forth.
"Surely you see what must be done, gentle Gatrog."
"I swore an oath."
"To whom? The Azurite? You swore one to Nurgle first."
Gatrog glanced back towards the duel. Torglug seemed to swell in strength as Gardas's light dimmed. The ending was inevitable. So why then did he hesitate?
"This is not the way,"
he said, looking back at his cousin.
"In the songs of Onogal, when did the knights of old ever shy away from a contest of arms or the truth of despair? But this is not such a contest. It is deceitful, a trick unworthy of us, unworthy of the king of all flies. The beauty of despair does not need to mask itself in falsehood."
"And again I ask, who are you to claim that?"
Goral finished his apple and tossed the core over his shoulder.
"Who are you to say what is true and what is false?"
He pointed.
"Look, see, she weeps to see such weakness."
Gatrog heard the clop of her hooves before he saw her. She who had brought peace to sevenfold warring duchies and forged from them a kingdom based on the ideals of despair, acceptance, and chivalry. The Lady of Cankerwall, in her rotting gown and mouldy furs, her face veiled, her hair bound and coiled about her slim shoulders like a serpent. Her pale hands were clasped before her, as if in prayer, and she smelled of rotting flowers and sour water. Tears of glistening pus dripped from beneath her veil. Gatrog sank to his knees.
"My lady, forgive me, but I swore an oath."
He knew she was not truly there, Like Goril and the others, she was but a manifestation of this place. But was it a sign of favor or a warning from the king of all flies?
Art thou a true knight and bold?
Her voice was like the rustle of dead leaves. He bowed his head.
I am.
A pale finger was pressed to his lips.
If you are, then why do you hesitate? What is honor weighed against the necessity of the gardener?
Before he could even attempt to formulate a reply, he heard a crash and saw Gardas flung to the deck by a blow from Torglug's axe. The Lord Celestin's rune blade skidded towards him, and his hand twitched for the hilt. A savage heat rose from the weapon, and he jerked back. He looked up as a shadow passed over him. Cadoc Kell plunged towards Torglug, roaring in fury. His attack drove the despised one back from his opponent. The knight Azeroth swung his beacon down like a club. Torglug battered it from his hand with a curse, sending it rolling away. Cadoc's sword hissed out, adding to the collection of wounds that marked Torglug's corpus. He lunged, blade extended. Torglug avoided the blow with inhuman grace and replied in kind before his opponent could react. Cadoc screamed as the blighted axe slammed down on his shoulder, shearing through his armor. His sword fell from nerveless fingers as he stumbled back. Torglug ripped the axe free and the knight Azeroth collapsed onto the deck. Torglug turned to face Gardas, chortling. Gatrog could see the weakness in the Lord Celestin's movements. This place, the miasma, it was eating away at Gardas's strength, though he didn't realize it. He faced Torglug, his back to Gatrog. The perfect target.
I swore an oath, he said. Victory is inevitable, the lady whispered. All is as the Lord of all things wills.
Gatrog felt her guide his hand towards the hilt of the runeblade. Despite the heat and the pain, he caught it up. He rose to his feet, certain of what he must do.
Desolation is on the horizon.
Grim cracked an eye and looked up at his captor. Spume stared down at him. The pirate nudged him with his axe.
Though he would like to be awake for it.
Grim tried to push himself up, but Spume's boot thumped down between his shoulders, flattening him.
I said awake, not on your feet.
Grim stared down into the bilges. The slaves who'd once occupied them were nowhere to be seen.
Dead weight, Spume said. We need speed now, so I had them chopped up and fed to the crew. Rest assured that they did not suffer unduly.
The Lord Castellan gave a hollow cry and tried to rise, fingers groping for Spume's fat neck. Spume drove the ferrule of his axe into Grim's stomach, doubling him over. A single blow from the pirate's meaty fist dropped him back onto all fours.
Angry, I hear. Mad enough to spit nails, I'd guess. Good.
Grim sagged, trying to catch his breath. Everything ached. Every joint felt swollen. His arms and legs felt as if they had been dislocated. His lungs burned. Spume let his axe sink into the deck.
The maggot curse has you. But it's slow. Takes time. The little buggers chew away at body and soul, and I bet they've never tasted anything like you before.
For a blood-simple reaver, he's astute, Bubonicus murmured.
Spume twitched.
I can hear ye, stowaway, and you'll pay mightily for those insults ye toss off so readily. Whoever ye are, your failure is evident. Elsewise ye wouldn't be walking the maggot road.
He chuckled.
You're just a bit of gristle to be stripped from the bone, and no more than that.
He indicated Grim.
This one is the real meat.
Grim tried to ignore Bubonicus's growing anger, but it clouded his thoughts as if it had been his own. It was growing harder and harder to tell where his thoughts left off and those of his unwelcome tenant began.
You think your falling into my lap was just happenstance?
Spume laughed.
Nurgle is called the Lord of all things for good reason. All that lives serves him in some way, even a half-life such as yours.
He rolled Grim onto his side and sank down into a crouch beside him. Thick fingers fumbled Grim's helmet from his head and sent it clattering away. Spume grunted.
I expected something else, but you're only flesh and blood after all.
He pinched Grim's cheek.
Not for long, though. I can smell the stink of that second soul rising wild and strong.
Spume slapped him and rose, chuckling.
Taking a while, though. You're a hard one, no doubt about it. Parched soil, as they say. Hard to grow anything of worth in that.
Grim struggled to rise, and Spume casually kicked him back over.
But it's taken all the fight out of ye. Pity. You'll be hollow and limp by the time we reach desolation.
The kraken beak in Spume's armpit snapped in what might have been frustration.
If I had my druthers, I'd rip that stowaway out of you and set him adrift.
And if I had mine, I'd silence your flapping tongue,
Grim growled. Spume's tentacles shot forward, wrapping about his head and throat. The pirate rose, dragging Grim into the air.
That's what I like to hear,
Spume gurgled.
Keep that fire in your belly lit. It'll serve you well in the nightmare to come. Perhaps if there's anything left of ye after Father Decay has had his way, I'll find a berth for you on my ship.
Grim laughed harshly. Spume cocked his head.
And why are ye laughing?
You boast so. I assume that you are more than just another slave.
Are you mad? He will kill you,
Bubonicus hissed. Grim ignored him. The tentacles tightened about Grim's neck.
I'm no slave,
Spume said.
No.
Grim met the pallid gaze of his captor and smiled.
Then why do you hurry so, to do the bidding of another?
The barbs lining the underside of the tentacles dug into his flesh, and blood spilled down inside his armor.
No, I will not let you do this.
Grim bit back a groan as something shifted inside him. He felt as if he had a bellyful of sour wine and brambles pressing against his lungs and throat. His limbs twitched, and he fought to remain still.
You think ye are the only one trapped here, shiny skin? There are seas beyond this one, and I would sail them. If that means I must lick the boots of some pampered lubberwort, so be it. All that matters to me is rejoining my armada.
And it is the nature of demons to fairly reward those who serve them, is it?
Grim's vision was blackening at the edges. He could barely breathe, and his spine ached from Spume's grip. Then, abruptly, Spume's grip slackened. The pirate let him fall to the deck.
You're a fool, but maybe a wise one.
Spume retrieved his axe.
I told you before, I will not be denied my glory by anyone, even the hand of Nurgle himself.
He turned away.
So have no fear on that score, lubber. You and I will settle up properly when all is said and done.
You fool! While I understand the urge to silence his prattling, I will not allow you to endanger us so.
Bubonicus sounded fearful.
Not when I am... Am what?
Grim said.
You think to possess my body? Sigmar made us of sterner stuff than that. Else why haven't you done it yet?
Bubonicus growled. Grim laughed mirthlessly.
You can't.
He tapped his head.
My mind is a fortress with walls made of faith.
You can scale them, but you cannot take them. Again and again, I have driven you back. I have held you in place.
And I have held you.
Grim nodded.
Yes, stalemate. If this were a proper siege, I'd give myself odds. But it's not. The best outcome is death. A meaningful one, preferably. But I'm not picky.
You have no honor.
A child's insult. Honor is the privilege of good men. You boast of having seen my memories, maggot. Tell me, am I a good man?
Bubonicus fell silent. After a moment, he murmured,
There is honor in such a death, I suppose. And I am tired. I have fought for the king of all flies for centuries. I have waged 1,000 wars in 1,000 kingdoms and died 1,000 times. But every cycle reaches its end. If this be my final battle, let it be a glorious one. Lay on, friend, and damned be him who cries hold.
For an instant, Grim felt a flicker of pity for the creature crouched within his soul. Here was a warrior, lost and damned though he was. What might he have been had Nurgle not poisoned his mind and soul? Grim closed his eyes.
To the death, then, he said.